This is the Talk of Trent Bridge. I'm Matt Freeman, and ahead of England's Trent Bridge test against New Zealand, I caught up with one of Nottinghamshire and the Black Caps' all-time greats. Sir Richard Hadley was a driving force behind Clive Rice's all-conquering Notts side of the 80s, while building a truly formidable record in the international arena. And coming up, Sir Richard gave his assessment on Brendan McCullum's start as England head coach.
I think players have related to him. I think the big challenge for him, with the brand of cricket he wanted to play or wants to play, is would everyone buy into that? So the ship is buoyant.
He shared his memories of watching a young Stuart Broad in action.
I thought, maybe. I think he's got a little bit of potential. I'm sure he's still got many more years left in him, even when Jimmy goes, and might even chase down Jimmy's record.
And he reminisced about a trophy-laden stint at Trent Bridge.
The time I had at Trent Bridge, I mean, I had 10 seasons there. It was only going to be three, actually. But during my time, I believe that was the greatest cricketing opportunity that I had, or greatest experience that I had.
But we began by looking back at England's win in the first test of the summer.
I watched a fair amount of it, an exciting test match. Both teams showed how they could win and lose a game after being in sort of dominant positions. So I thought it was a fascinating test match. I mean, our boys clearly have come over to England. They want to win the series. It's quite a rare achievement for New Zealand teams to win not only test matches, but test series in England. They were able to do it in 86 for the first time. I thought it was a fascinating test match. I think both teams showed what they've got in the way of ability. I thought it was exciting. I think the brand of cricket was attacking. The bowlers certainly had their day, and just a couple of partnerships made the difference. One for New Zealand with Mitchell, and who was the other fella?
Top of my head now. Blundell, was it?
Oh, Blundell, yeah, the wicketkeeper. Yeah. I mean, those two really put New Zealand back into a dominant position. And then, of course, Joe Root played a fantastic innings with good support from folks. So, to me, it was a good test match. Good for English cricket, obviously. Mm. To win that match, particularly with all the hype with Brendan McCullum, a New Zealander, coming in to coach the side, and Ben Stokes, another New Zealander captain in England. I thought it was a fascinating combination. But both have a style or approach of the game of wanting to win. And when you do that, you take risks. And I think both teams did take risks, and one came out better. So I think with the next test match, I think we'll see a similar approach to the game, where both teams will want to win, and just shows to me that test cricket's in good spirits as the game is played the way it should be played. I thought it was played in a wonderful spirit.
Yeah, you mentioned the attacking mindset that both teams showed. I mean, how proud have you been of both the success New Zealand have had in all forms in recent years, but also the way they've gone about it, which has been quite compelling to watch?
Yeah, well, New Zealand are very competitive in all forms of the game. Test matches, obviously, being the Test Championship side. One day cricket, T20 cricket, we're making finals now. Not quite winning them as far as one day cricket is concerned, but we are a competitive unit. I think we just need to look back to the McCullum era, actually, and what he brought to our game. And that was an attacking style. I mean, he really gave players the freedom to express themselves. And I think that's the best way to go. Instead of keeping players in cocoons and being cautious and trying to play for positions and that sort of thing. But if you're allowed to let yourself go, then all of a sudden better results can come. So collectively and individually, I mean, we've got, a very competitive team. Players are ranked highly in batting and bowling. Averages are far better than ever in our playing history. So we're a good side. And I think we've got to acknowledge that. And I think people enjoy, you know, New Zealand coming to their shores and playing. I mean, in the old days, New Zealand was never really rated and perhaps not an exciting side to come along and support and watch and those sorts of things. But I think now New Zealand are up there with some of the best in the world and play a brand of cricket that's just as good as anyone's.
What's the reaction been like in New Zealand to Brendan McCullum coming over to coach England's Test team?
Look, I think one of a surprise. But, you know, if you look at all sports these days, I mean, coaches travel all around the world. For Brendan, clearly it was an opportunity, a challenge that he's welcomed, he's embraced it. I think it might have been a nerve-wracking experience for him on the first day of a test match because of so many unknowns. But I think he made a dramatic impact, really, and I think players have related to him. I think the big challenge for him with the brand of cricket he wanted to play or wants to play is would everyone buy into that? I mean, the players, the captain, the support staff, even the public, the media, would they accept it? And I think Brendan, at the very least, in this series, would have to win a test match, which he's done, and probably win the series, which he may well do. Because if neither of those things had happened, then a lot of questions may be asked from the media, from former players, from former captains, and that sort of thing. So the ship is buoyant at the moment. He's got through it. I think the real challenge will come is if New Zealand can pinch this test match and then going into the last one, just how both teams play the game.
Now, of course, Trent Bridge was a venue you had plenty of success at, both domestically and, I suppose, first we'll talk internationally in some of those test matches. What would your first test at Trent Bridge have been the first time you visited the ground?
Yeah, 1973. I was a 22-year-old coming over to England for the first time and didn't really know what to expect. It was obviously going to be an exciting tour for me, and the county games tended to go pretty good for me. I was selected for the first test match, perhaps against the odds in many ways. So I was a sort of a young tearaway fast bowler that probably had a bit of potential, obviously, and I was thrown in the deep end. And referring to that particular match, we bowled England out for 250, which we thought was a pretty good effort because England had a pretty good batting side with Boycott and Amos and Greg and these fellas. And then the cloud cover came in when we batted. It was nice sort of conditions for swing seam bowling, and we got bowled out for 97. So all the good work that we had done had clearly been wasted pretty quickly. And then England made a lot in the second innings, 325 for 8 declared, with Dennis Amos and Tony Greig scoring hundreds. And we had to score a massive 479 runs to win the match. Now, on the morning of the fourth day, as I recall it, the members of the media were checking out of the Bridgeford Hotel because they felt that the game would be over on the fourth day. There'd be no fifth day, so they checked out. But then at the end of the fourth day, they had to check back in because we were chasing these runs pretty well. And at the end of the day, we fell 39 runs short. I mean, to get to 440 in that chase of 479, had we got those runs, it would have been the greatest run chase ever in the history of the game. And Bevan Congdon, who was our captain, scored a magnificent 176, and Vic Pollard 100. And we got close. We missed out at the end of the day. And when I look at my performances, they are pretty well non-existent, actually. I only got one wicket in the match, conceded 143 runs. John Snow bowled me for a duck, and I was four not out at the end. So that was my my first test appearance at Trent Bridge. Mixed memories, obviously, but still a remarkable test match in the sense that that run chase was a fantastic achievement.
I think things certainly improved in terms of your Trent Bridge international record, though. I think 86 was the one that stuck out when I was reading through earlier on with 10 wickets and a half century in the match as well.
Yeah, 86 was a good one. Of course, I've been playing at Notts for about 7 or 8 years for a starter. And so I was well aware of English conditions. And so when that test match came, I was pretty well prepared and looking forward to it. In some ways, it was a home match for me. There was always going to be a bit of Nottinghamshire support from members and supporters and others. And they gave me a good welcome, a fair welcome, being a member of the opposition. We bowled England out for 256, so that was a pretty pleasing result. And on that day, I managed to get 6 for 80. So to get a bag of 5 wickets on your home ground is something to cherish. And when we batted, we got to 413. So we got a pretty good lead. John Brace was scoring 110, and I managed to get 68 with the bat. So I was starting to have a bit of an all-round impact on the game, if you like. And then we bowled England out for the 230, got 4 wickets in the second innings. So that was 10 wickets for the match. And I didn't actually know it at the time. When I was doing a bit of research on that particular match, I found out that it was my 7th 10-wicket or more wickets in a match, which at the time equaled a world record that was held by Esset Barnes from England and Clary Grimmett from Australia. Clary Grimmett, of course, was a New Zealand-born cricketer who went to Australia and obviously played for Australia. And my great friend and foe, Dennis Lilly, had also done that feat. So I was in a nice little bracket of achievers, if you like. So that was pretty pleasing. And we only had to get 74 runs to win the match. And we won by 8 wickets. But the game had a peculiar finish to it because David Gower was given the ball to bowl the last over. And he bowled a ball. In fact, he didn't bowl it. He chucked it. And it was a no ball, got hit for 4. So when you look at his bowling stats, no deliveries and conceded 4 runs. So it was really those anomalies in the game of cricket. So it was a great win for us. And it helped us win the series for the first time in England. We drew the other test matches. We drew the last one at the Oval, which was important. So to get that series win, it was significant in our history. And even in 1983, when we came over, we didn't play at Trembridge, but we won our first ever test match on English soil at Headingley, went on to lose the series. But we were starting in our history throughout the 80s in particular, we were winning more offshore. And that was giving us more sort of credibility and respect, if you like. So to win that test at Trent Bridge, go on and win the series in 86, was another ticking of the box, if you like.
What was Trent Bridge like as a ground for you to bowl at?
County cricket, it was very good because when I first arrived in England at Notts, that was 1978, and the team wasn't particularly going well in those days. It was a bit of a contest as to who was going to finish bottom. Was it Derbyshire or Notts? And we had featherbed tracks. In other words, they were there for batsmen to score runs. Bowlers found it difficult to get wickets and to get results, basically. If you're not winning games, you're not going to win enough points to be competing in championships. And then throughout the 80s, there was a directive actually from the Test and County Cricket Board, the TCCB at the time, was that an instruction went out to groundsmen to produce more fair and result wickets or contests between bat and ball, if you like. And so we had a few green tops at Trent Bridge, and certainly in 81 when we won the county championship, opposition teams would arrive at the ground and say, "Where's the pitch?" And they would say, "It's out there. You just need to look for the white markings that to provide the pitch." But we got a lot of good results there, and teams feared us at Trent Bridge. In fact, I remember one year the groundsman Ron Allsop had shaved the ends so that the spinners could bowl into the rough, if you like, but the quicker bowlers, the seam bowlers, swing bowlers, had the green part to make the ball deviate off the pitch and use the atmospheric conditions. So we did what the instruction was to produce result pitches. But of course, when it came to test matches, clearly they were a lot flatter, and it was a far better contest over 5 days where it brought all elements into the game, where batsmen could score runs, quicker bowlers got a bit of pace and bounce, there was a bit of swing as well, and the spinners would come into play. So that's what you need in test cricket. But in county cricket, they were just a little bit on the frisky side, which we profited from. But opposition teams that came to Trent Bridge, they all had quality fast bowlers. You know, when you look at Sussex, Imran and Garth LaRue, there was Wayne Daniel and Norman Cowans at Middlesex. There was Joel Garner, Ian Botham from Somerset. I mean, all the counties had quality fast bowlers. I think we tended to use them better because we pitched the ball up a lot more. And the danger is when young fast bowlers come to a ground where they see grassy pitches that they bowl too short. And so by pitching the ball up and trying to beat batsmen off a length, we're able to do that far better. Mind you, we had a pretty good pace attack. with Clive Rice, myself. We had Mike Hendrick there for a season. Kevin Cooper was a very good swing bowler. Andy Pick, Kevin Saxelby, they all played a role. And we all complemented each other. And, of course, we had Eddie Hemmings, who had a magnificent time during his career at Trent Bridge. He started off at Warwickshire, I think, as a seam bowler, but came to Notts as a high-quality off-spinner and played for England, of course. And we had a pretty competitive side too. We had at least seven international players in our side. When you look at Chris Broad, Tim Robertson, Derek Randall, of course. There's myself, obviously playing for New Zealand. Clive Rice, a South African, would have been a fantastic test player had he had the opportunity, but isolation prevented him from doing that. Bruce French was one of the best wicket keepers that I bowled to. Eddie Hemmings, of course. And Mike Hendrick also played for England. So when you look at that experience and the balance in our side, we were always going to be contesting or challenging for titles. And in 81, we won that championship, which was the first time in 52 years. And I'll never forget Reg Simpson, you know, quality England player and committee member at Trent Bridge. He came into our dressing room at the end of the last match, which when we beat Glamorgan, and he had tears in his eyes because this was such an emotional moment for him, you know, after 52 years, if you like, to see the club win a county championship. You know, we were winning titles, we were competing for them. If we weren't finishing first, we were finished second or third.
We had a small gathering of some of the 1981 players at the back end of last year, and I think Bashir Hassan put a lot of emphasis on the draw against Sussex as the big result, with Hemmings and Bohr seeing out those last 10 overs. What was that like to watch on as that unfolded?
Oh, nerve-wracking. Look, I'd love to have been at the luncheon, and I did send them my best wishes and thinking of you, and just reminiscing the great times that we all had at Trent Bridge during that era. But that match that you talked about, had we lost that, Sussex would have gone on and won the championship. So, Noddy and Eddie out there surviving, and they just hung in tough. Don't know how, but they did. And they saved the match and us not losing a valuable point. So it was a great thing to be part of.
And you talk about your approach to bowling at Trent Bridge as well, with the green pitches and pitching things up. Did county cricket change how you bowled, do you think?
Look, I've got to look back and say that the time I had at Trent Bridge, I mean, I had 10 seasons there. It was only going to be three, actually. But during my time, I believe that was the greatest cricketing opportunity that I had, or greatest experience that I had, certainly over a long, long period of time, because I learned more about professionalism. Now, when I arrived in 78, I was 27. I was sort of in and out of the test side. Performance were a little bit inconsistent, some very good ones, but some average ones and some poor ones. And I just wasn't really coming to terms really with what I had to do in preparation, basically. So once I joined Notts, I learned how to prepare the body. And if you're going to play anywhere between 80 and 100 days of competitive cricket in different forms of the game, you're going to learn. And I think the habits, the disciplines and routines that I got into in the prep and the games that I played, it fine-tuned me as a cricketer. I mean, I was pretty handy new ball bowler, I think it's fair to say. But my batting was, I'd be batting lower down the order, sometimes 9, 10 when I first started my career. I managed to work my way up to number 7 for Notts, and sometimes I batted number 6. So you have a different psychological approach to batting. Down the order, you tend to at times give it away. But if you're batting at 6 and 7, there's more responsibility as an all-rounder, still to be positive, but be more selective in the shots that you want to play. And so my batting performances improved dramatically. Then helped make me almost a complete cricketer. And to score hundreds, which I did for Notts, including a double hundred against Middlesex at Laws, 210 not out, my highest ever first-class score. As I say, being able to do those sorts of things benefited not only Notts cricket, but Canterbury cricket here in New Zealand, and, of course, New Zealand cricket, Test cricket. Yeah. And I've always believed that the all-rounder is one of the most valuable players in the team, because with either a brilliant batting or bowling inspired performance can change the course of the game, if not win it. So if you're not doing it with the ball, you've got a chance of doing it with the bat. And if you're doing it with both and making that sort of contribution by scoring runs and getting wickets, it's a major player in outcomes of games. So the Notts experience was magnificent. Just to go back a bit, when I joined Notts in 78, I had a three-year contract. And in 1980, my last year, I only played about seven first-class games because I had a chronic ankle injury that actually plagued me right throughout my career, but I was able to manage it a bit later on. But at that time in 1980, I was really struggling. And I made it clear to the club that I'd be finishing my time at Trent Bridge in 1980. And the last game of the season was a Sunday league match. We were playing Lancashire at Trent Bridge. And, of course, Sunday leagues, you've only got a 15-yard, 15-metre run-up. There's a line. You can't start your run-up beyond that. And I took 6 for 12, which was a pleasing way to pretty well end my career, if you like. And I remember standing on the balcony with Clive Rice and Harold Larwood and Bill Vose sort of saying farewell, thanks very much. And John Heatley, who was the chairman of the cricket club at that time, came into the dressing room and says, Richard, we want you back. Even if you bowl off three paces, we want you back. And so they gave me some months to think about this. And I did contemplate it because I used to come in off about a 22-yard run-up, and the wear and tear in the body can be pretty harsh. But by bowling off a shorter run-up, I remodeled my action, got in closer to the stumps, had far more rhythm, developed far more skills from the shorter run-up. I thought, right, I'll come back. And the rest is history. I was far more successful off the shorter run-up than what I was off the longer run-up, three times more effective. And so that was the turning point of my whole career, actually. And so it was the short run thereafter from 1980. I got a lot of criticism, a lot of flack back here in New Zealand, actually, playing in the test match against Australia at Eden Park in 1980-81. And I operated off the shorter runner, and people just criticised it. I mean, how can a new ball bowler, fast bowler, come off a short run? It's just not the thing to do. Fast bowlers have got to run off 25, 30 yards, like a Michael Holding sort of thing. But I made the decision, a conscious one, had to overcome all the flack and criticism. And as I say, the short run really took me to new levels. And then to go on to be the first bowler to capture 400 test wickets, that was all off the short run. And so my career ended up being far better than perhaps I ever believed it could. And so I've got to thank Notts, Trent Bridge, and others who I played with and against for helping me make that decision.
Yeah, and that extended Notts' career, if you like, did include the Lord's final win, which you touched on a little bit earlier. How special was that, especially considering the defeats that Notts had in finals before and the fact that you're up against it in that final that you won as well?
Well, it was a two-day, one-day game. Yeah, that's right. That was against Northampton in 87. I can't remember the stats or anything like that, but I know we had to go into the second day because of rain. And we'd lost our top four wickets for not too many. I don't know what we were
doing. Yeah, chasing. I think 84 for five chasing right. 230 plus. Chasing. It was a long way away, yeah.
Yeah. So I went in and played my normal type of innings. I mean, it wasn't gung-ho or anything like that, but I played in attacking innings, and I think I got 70, 75, something like that, and a couple of good supporting roles there from others. But to win our first ever final, again, was another significant breakthrough for Notts, and one that over time I felt we deserved. And, it was probably against the odds, the way we'd actually played. But I think consistently over a period of years, we were due to win a one-day final. I think that's the point I'm trying to make. And so we did. So that was wonderful.
And you talk about Reg Simpson's reaction when you won the county title. Did Did these trophies come to mean more to you, I guess, the longer your association goes on with Notts?
Yeah, yes. In fact, it was interesting because I said 86 was my benefit year. And so when with New Zealand touring and county cricket and the benefit year, it was a pretty tough juggling act to do everything. So I think I only played the test matches for New Zealand and went back and played the county games for Notts. And so when that year finished, I always said that I'll come back to Notts and we'd have to win a one-day title before I finally left. So there was a bit of pressure on. And so we did it in 87. Otherwise, I might be still playing today to try a one-day title. But it's amazing how things tend to fall into place. And to me, not as I say, was fantastic. It completed my career. It was a wonderful time, and then it was time to move on to other things. In fact, when I retired in 1990, I still had a long association, still have a long association with cricket. Clearly, I went into radio and television commentary. I've written a number of books, wrote a lot of newspaper articles, magazine articles. Then I was managing our New Zealand A teams to places like Sri Lanka and India and Australia. I was a national selector for 8 years, chairman of selectors. I served on the board of New Zealand Cricket for 4 years up until 2017. So, you know, you just move from one role to another within the game. But whilst I don't have an active involvement now, in fact, just recently in the last 2 weeks, actually, we've just opened a new indoor cricket centre that bears my name, the Sir Richard Hadley Sports Centre, which is at Hagley Oval, right behind the pavilion. So we've got all the facilities we need to make Hagley Oval one of the best, if not the best, international cricket ground in New Zealand. So that's a nice tribute to be part of. And so I look forward to seeing the new generation using that facility and coming through. But I don't have an active involvement as such these days. I certainly watch and I listen and take an interest in the game, all formats of the game for that matter. But I think I've done my time now for making decisions on people's lives and careers and those sorts of things.
Yeah, and how proud does it make you that you're still held in such esteem by the Notts supporters, I guess? I mean, there was a poll during the lockdown that put you as the greatest cricketer of all time for Notts, ahead of people like Derek Randall and Clive Rice in that list as well. How proud does it make you that you're still regarded so fondly 30 years on?
Well, I wasn't aware of that, but Gary Sobers was
also, well, yeah, not even, yes, the name is not even on the
show. You know, yeah, I've got to say, my dear friend Clive Rice, sadly gone and miss him dearly, but to me he was a magnificent player, a great leader, potent fast bowler, a batsman of great determination, and to be rated above that, and other fantastic players as well. I mean, accolades are always significant in their own right, and I respect them accordingly. And I've been fortunate to win a number of awards and trophies and have wonderful recognition. And you put them all together, you just sort of look back on one's career and say, how the hell did I do all that? So I thank people that wish to recognise me in that way.
Yeah, and how's it made you feel to see that there's been a strong New Zealand link, really, with Trent Bridge over time? I mean, Jameson was speaking in his press conference today about seeing photos of yourself and Stephen Fleming and Chris Cairns and Andre Adams on the walls, and it being quite inspiring for him. How nice is that, that there has been that lineage, if you like?
Oh, it's great. And I'd always encourage any young player given the opportunity, even experienced player, given the opportunity to go to England and play county cricket, if you have that chance, take it. Because for me, you know, I rate it so highly in the development of my career. I suppose in my day, the thing was that you had a loyalty to one club. You didn't sort of jump around 1 year, play for one club, the next year you go and play for somebody else. But of course, I realise that times have changed, and with the different formats of games these days, with the T20, the 100 championship and other things, that players are going to come in for a few weeks and then move on somewhere else around the world and perhaps get bought into another type of competition. That's the way it is. But all that experience is important. And it's not for me to be critical of people's choices and decisions that they make. And it's nice to know that more and more New Zealanders are coming to England to play in different forms at the game, and that they will say exactly what I'm saying. It's a great experience and opportunity to become a better player.
And I guess your mantle as a Nottinghamshire fast bowler making waves internationally has been taken by Stuart Broad these days, who's still racking up the wickets and the records. And I think he spoke to you, didn't he, around the 2019 period before he's had another burst of success in recent summers.
Yeah, we've had a number of communications. But, of course, I played with Chris, his father.
Yeah.
And Chris and I have developed a great friendship over the years, not only playing the game, but, of course, when he was match referee and we'd come out to New Zealand, we'd catch up when we could. And I saw a young Stuart Broad play. And I thought, maybe I think he's got a little bit of potential. I think he might have been Melton Mowbray, he might have been playing a game there, a club game or something on a Sunday. And it was sort of a benefit match for him in some ways because they were raising money for Stuart to go over to Australia as like an 18-year-old to go and play a bit of club cricket, gain some overseas experience. I was able to help in that way by being the guest speaker. But as time has gone on, I've seen Stuart grow and grow, not only in height and stature, but in the way that he is bowled. And he and Jimmy have formed a formidable new ball combination, the most successful opening combination in the history of the game with the collation of wickets. And Stuart came to me a couple of times just to ask for some advice, which I was more than happy to pass on. He was just going through a phase, you know, do I come off a long run or what's it like coming off the shorter run? So I gave him an insight into how I came to that decision and how it helped me. And then it was up to him to work through what was good for him. So I think he's middle way, actually, between the short and the long. But he's one of those guys that just changes a game from nowhere, out of the blue, like in the last test match, there were three wickets and three balls. I know one was a run out, but he just changed the course of that match. And sometimes he's comes in with a performance where he gets a 6 for 15 or something like that as an impact player. So full marks to Stuart on what he's done, whether he's been treated fairly or unfairly on the being left out of the West Indies. Those decisions are always subjective. The decision was made. He's had a bit of a stand down period, so maybe he's grown more love for the game. Still got a point to prove, and I'm sure he's still got many more years left in him, even when Jimmy goes. I think Stuart will be around a bit more and might even chase down Jimmy's record. So you need a little bit of motivation, these sorts of things to keep you going, something to focus on, to give you a purpose, focused direction. And I'm not sure what his mindset is at the moment, but I think he's still got a lot to offer.
Well, we look forward to seeing what he offers us at Trembridge this week. And here's to a competitive second test as well. And thank you for sharing your memories with us as well for this last half an hour or so. It's been a pleasure to look back through.